Film Vault.
Why so spirited?
Yeah, Film Vault. Welcome to Film Vault, everyone. That's Anderson.
Yeah.
I'm Brian Fisher. We're your hosts for today. Some picks you can stream online right now for free if you're a subscriber.
You know what depresses me?
Free.
You know what depresses me is Logan has told us that these episodes don't get the same amount of attention.
Yeah.
Or downloads or listens, which makes me sad because, yeah, we do these like on weeks like this week where I'm out of town.
Where are you right now?
I'm up at camp right now.
That's right.
And Logan's out of town as well.
Logan's out of town
with his family. So we decided to take a week where we're doing streaming. But I can't speak for you, but I still put a lot of energy and effort into this.
I put actually sometimes more effort and energy into these. This week, I spread it around, not just Netflix movies, but Amazon movies.
Yeah, I got a couple Amazon and a couple Netflix. And these are, it's one of the only times where we can almost guarantee that all of our top five are going to be really solid picks.
Yes, indeed. And you often look at this show as a service.
Right.
And every once in a while, you know, we'll do top fives where it's a bit silly or off the cuff or more based on our opinions, you know, movies that made us cry, et cetera, et cetera. This is actually a service. This is, hey, you're a Friday night, you're looking for a movie to watch at home, listen to this episode and check out some good movies.
Let me tell you this, too. My top three are all actually all five of them are 2011 or newer. And my top three are all movies that came out within the last 12 months that are worth watching. And you can stream them now for free if you pay monthly for the service of your choosing. So, okay, let's get right to Flick Fashion.
Flick Fashion. Please, Flick Fest first, Anderson.
Okay, yeah, wait, hold on. It's trying to make me do...
I don't like that.
No, I don't like it either. My phone is constantly, whenever there's an upgrade, it wants me to do it now.
No,
it's like
no,
a nagging
no,
girlfriend.
Not now.
I don't want to do it now. Okay. Brian, let me ask you this. Have you ever had the desire to watch a nun give birth?
A nun to give birth?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that was possible under the rules of being a nun.
Well, if you've ever so desired to see such an event take place in a unfold in a narrative film, Brian, you're in luck. There's a movie in theaters now called The Innocents or Les Innocentes. 2016 in theaters now. This is a movie directed by Anna Fontaine.
Ferris?
Anna Fontaine. She's the writer of that movie Adore that came out in 2013. Mm-hmm. You might remember Naomi Watts and her friend. They both have like young sons. And
this is another one that felt like homework.
Do you remember that? Adore?
I never saw it, but I remember. I recall.
I could kind of tell where it was going to go. She was going to hook up with the son. She wrote that. She also wrote this. The difference with this, though, is it's based on a true story. The Innocents takes place in 1945 Poland. And there's a covenant where a bunch of nuns reside. And they're very angry nuns for the most part.
Poland. Okay.
Just after the war, just after the liberation. And the Russians, the Ruskies, have... taken over large chunks of Poland, as was the case at the time.
Spoils of war.
Some of the spoils, as far as the Russians were concerned, were supple nuns.
Russians don't do so hot
in this movie.
Let me jump in. This is a new movie in theaters now.
It's a laugh riot.
This is in theaters now.
Yes.
Okay.
Comedy.
Just making sure.
Not a comedy. This is
dark.
I
was going to say, it's a comedy.
There is comedy. There is comedic moments. Okay. There is one actor. There is one... doctor, he's a Jewish doctor in particular.
He's
got some very funny lines in this movie. It's not all doom and gloom. There are some subtle moments and of humor. The storyline is this: the Russians came, and this is all based on true events. The Russians came, they stormed the covenant, and they took what they wanted, which was the nuns' vaginas. That sounded just awful saying it, right?
What's it called? Les what?
The Innocents.
Les Innocents.
Les Innocents. And many of these nuns, turns out, they're pregnant. So it turns into the story of a wet nurse, or not wet nurse, I'm sorry, I always get that confused. And I actually have
a midwife?
One now. Midwife, thank you.
Do you have a midwife?
I have a midwife, yeah.
We're doing a
We're
doula.
Through Kaiser.
Are you doing
so
a doula or a midwife?
I don't know what the fuck, either one.
Midwife is more medical, doula is more like a like patient advocate support.
No, we're done. No, we're not doing that. Whatever Kaiser gave us. I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about the Innocents, about pregnant nuns.
Doula.
So the story goes on as to what they do with these pregnancies, how they discuss them, how they keep them discreet, because if anyone were to find out, that would be a huge scandal, right? And the one main nun at the forefront, who's kind of in charge of all of these all the other nuns, she is put to task, and how the various pregnant nuns deal with their pregnancies and how they turn out. And
91% Rotten Tomatoes.
It's a very good movie. It did give me plenty of pause and time to reflect on other things, though, as my mind is wont to do when I'm watching these kind of slow moving movies, Brian. So actually, I got some really good work done in my head on some of the projects that I'm working right now on right now. Because there's a lot of quiet moments in this movie. This movie is not...
Just the creative juices flowing.
It kind of does. There's a lot of quiet moments in this movie. But it's a quality film. It's a good movie. And I don't want to spend too much time on it because it's kind of hard to track down right now. But you should be familiar with
limited release, I'm assuming?
I can't imagine it not being up for limited. Best foreign language film. It's the languages spoken are French, Polish, and Russian. I believe Polish is, yes. There's a lot of communication issues because they were adamant about not using Polish doctors or nurses because they couldn't get it out in the community. And it's fascinating. It was based on a true story. And
I'm looking on Box Office Mojo to see how many theaters it's in right now.
It's not in many theaters, but this is a movie that you might hear about again later in the year when it gets up for some awards here and there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. Sorry.
So it was a big Sundance film, as you might imagine. Mm-hmm. 1945.
Did it come out this week? Or is it?
I think it came out a week or two ago. Not important. I think we should move on.
I'm trying to find it. I'm obsessed.
The Innocence, Brian. Obsessed. The Innocence. Why are you obsessed with The Innocence?
It was something. There it is. 29th box office. It is in 61 theaters.
61. That's pretty good.
Yeah. It's hard to track down, like you said.
Yeah, a little hard to track down. But
although it's in 61 theaters, it's probably playing in about 20 states.
I don't know why we're spending so much time on this.
Well, because it's a movie you like, obviously.
Yeah, I don't love it. It's not going to show up in my top 10 list at the end of the year. But, you know, it's the listener now is somewhat aware of The Innocence. Yeah, it's the first time I've ever seen a movie in regards to pregnant nuns. I know much more about pregnant nuns than I ever have.
You and I have got an oddly similar flick fashion this week because my first film is a film that is equally hard to track down, but for different reasons, Anderson. Have you ever heard of The Godfather Epic?
Tell me more about this Godfather epic. Is it where somebody took all three of them and tried to make one good movie?
Close. The Godfather Saga, a.k.a. The Godfather Epic, a.k.a. The Godfather 1902 to 1959, The Complete Epic, is a 7.5-hour movie that I watched.
Did you really? When?
It's the
why? Did Christie had never seen any of the Godfathers and you're like,
this
is
this is, and I'm gonna jump in and say this is not the way to introduce someone to the Godfather. Okay. This is not as good.
Little trivia.
This is for fans and enthusiasts.
Winona Ryder, she was supposed to be in the third one. She turned it down to be in Edward Scissorhands.
And Sofia Coppola took her spot?
Could be.
I have to assume it was that role.
Probably.
The Godfather epic is, as far as I can tell, first came on the scene in 1977. It is 7.5 hours long. It is the first two Godfather films re-edited chronologically.
So Who did this?
You get Coppola. So you get young Vito, you get Robert De Niro, and then you get Godfather Part 1.
So it's all linear
now. Then you get the end of Godfather Part 2. So it's re-edited linearly with a whole bunch, a mess of deleted scenes, extended scenes, barely half-complete scenes. And listen, this is for hardcore fans.
Right.
This is for enthusiasts. This is for film buffs. I'm not giving.
I wouldn't want it because it would cloudy what I already know.
If you know The Godfather well enough, then you can see this and be like, oh, that's interesting. Oh, that's a scene I've never seen before. And there's a lot of times where I was like, wait, is that new? Wait, I kind of remember that. Is that new? Because so much stuff is like an extension of a previous scene that you're like, wait, I'll remember that. Is that new?
You'd almost have to watch them both side by side.
There are times when the editing is sloppy, as you can imagine. There's times when there's bad ADR, like they had to have contemporary voiceover actors like do the ADR
for Brando.
There's times when the film stock doesn't match because
they probably never corrected mastered some
it.
Of this
exactly
stuff,
but none of it mattered. I watched the whole goddamn thing. It was fascinating. Again, I cannot recommend this for everyone, but if you're into movies, this is something you should track down. Now here's the problem. I saw this back in January when it was on HBO and they were running it all the time. I'm like, oh, this is great. It was on HBO Go. It was everywhere. And now it's not on HBO Go anymore. It's extremely hard to find. It's on Cinemax, and if you are a subscriber to Cinemax, you can watch it on DirecTV or Xfinity or whatever you have.
I don't think you're recommending it, though, right? Except for the hardcore Godfather, the Godcourse.
I loved it because I loved The Godfather. I loved seeing it in a new way. Uh-huh. There's a movie like The Godfather, at this point, I don't know how much more pleasure I can derive from it other than nostalgia because I'm not picking up a lot of new things when I watch it. I'm reminded of great things. This, at the very least, I was able to see these movies that I know and love so much in new ways.
You know,
that was cool.
You know what's good for me is I have this in my future because it's probably been 15, maybe 20 years since I've seen any of them. probably since the third one came out, and when I went back and watched the first two again to prepare for the third one, the wife hasn't seen them at all. So I don't think you
can introduce her this way.
Not this way. Not this one, no. But I have a future where I'm going to sit down and watch at least the first two back to back
with the wife. That's a good idea.
And I'm going to, it's a lot of it's going to be fresh to me because it's been so long.
Now, I hesitate to even tell you my opinion, but I want to see if you're on board with me. I really want to see if, please flick fest, or at least find a way to talk about it when you do, because what? I am of the opinion, well, your experience of going back and watching them now so many years later. Number two, some people claim it's better than number one. False.
Now, people love to say that, and they think that they sound educated and like film snobs. Yeah. They think that they automatically...
No, it's better than number one.
They think they automatically... Now, I don't want to be speaking out of turn or offending people, because I think there are arguments to be made that number two is better than number one.
There are parts of number two that are better than
two. But I've seen it happen too many times in real life, in living flesh, where somebody will pipe up at a bar, go, oh, Godfather 2, far superior than one. And it's like, usually they're people that are speaking out of turn. They don't know much about movies, and they feel like saying that will give them credibility. Yeah. Dr. Drew, can I move on?
There's some great stuff though. Young Vito is great.
Do these fucking directors from the 70s, from the golden era of cinema, Spielberg and Lucas and now Coppola, can they stop fucking with their old work and just look forward?
It's let it be. What are you doing? Everyone loves. There's no reason to mess with us.
Yeah, I have no interest in seeing this 7.5 hour monstrosity.
It's a curiosity.
Unless I was, because I'm not to the point of fanship where I'd even be able to. I would have a hard time. Like I said, I'm so far removed. Probably 20 years since I've seen either one of them.
Oh.
I'm interested.
I'm excited, though. It's a hard sell, though. I've been bringing it up every now and again with the wife. Now, here's the irony. If it was set up like in 8 parts and it was on Netflix, she'd be in. Let's do it.
You know what? It's funny. I feel like you don't even have to sell her on both, because if she likes number one, she's going to be dying to see number two.
That's what's inevitably going to happen. Yeah. I remember back in the old days when one of the first times that I did it, it was with a new girlfriend. She had not seen them. I went and rented the two VHS copies. Like, it was number one was double cassetted. Yep. And then we watched it, and it was so great. And I had the opportunity to drive back down the road to Hollywood Video or whatever it was to get the second one. Honey, I'll be right back. I'll bring back popcorn. We're going to get it right into the second one. Wow. Oh, so good. That was a different kind of binging back then.
I also wonder if this is something you'll have to ask your wife, because she's new to it, if she'll pick up so many things from pop culture, like the horse head and the offer. I
love seeing the origin of things like that. Like, that's where it all started.
She's going to have so many of those moments.
I think you're right. Oh, just the Brando.
Yeah.
Like, she sees it all the time. We just watched Zootopia together. And like, you know, the little fucking Mr. Big Man, Mr. Big is doing, what's his name? Big, whatever. He's doing Brando, the mole.
I thought it was
Zootopia.
It was in Jungle Book. Zootopia. Oh no, that's Brando and the
and that's Apocalypse Now. Yeah, but you're right. Both of those.
Oh yeah,
movies,
you're right. The little tiny mole. Yeah.
Here we go. I saw a movie. I'm very excited to flickfest this one. I might have, should have, possibly started off with this one, because this one's a fun one to talk about. Last week, you and I both talked about a movie called Detroit Rock City. It was about four young boys who are trying to go see Kiss. Ed Furlong was one of those boys. There was another actor in there. You got to remember the name because it's an odd one. Giuseppe.
That's right.
Giuseppe, Brian. Giuseppe Andrews.
There you go.
He is still around, as you'd imagine. Uh-huh. He's probably in his mid-30s now. And there was a movie, documentary. It's streaming right now on Amazon, called Giuseppe Makes a Movie. Now, I first heard about this movie. You might have heard about it, too, because I'm pretty sure Mike Carano was trying to sell me on going to see this on the After Disaster probably about a year ago or so. He had not even seen it, but Bobcat was talking to him about it, and we were supposed to go see a screening of it like before it even came out or something, and then he went and saw it without me. I don't know. So I was familiar with this movie. I had no idea what it was about. Adam Rifkin, the same guy that directed Detroit Rock City, directed this Giuseppe Makes a Movie. And remember American Movie?
Remember? That's a great movie. Coven.
Giuseppe Makes a Movie should accompany that movie.
Okay.
Like, we're just talking about Godfather 1 and Godfather 2.
It's a companion piece?
It is a companion piece to American Movie. Equally, if not more fascinating than American Movie. However, this one does not transcend. This is not a movie you're going to sit down and watch with your mom or probably even your wife or maybe your husband if you're a female who listens to this and has like a straight and narrow husband. I tried to watch the first 10 minutes with this one with the wife. She was not
She wasn't into it.
This is a hard movie to watch, but here's the story. It's pretty goddamn simple. Giuseppe Andrews, who was kind of the grungy kid. If you're familiar with Detroit Rock City, there's four kids. There was the Hesher, who was kind of like the Jay from Jay and Silent Bob.
Right.
There was Eddie Furlong. There was the nerdy drummer kid with the religious mom. And then there's the fourth kid
one.
who saved Natasha Lyonne, right? He was like the grungy kid. That's Giuseppe. Giuseppe is a spindly mid-30s, seemingly cranked out of his fucking mind.
What year is this from?
This is 2015. Oh, 2014. Okay. Just came out like last year, year and a half ago. He lives in a trailer park up in Ventura, California, which is about 50 miles from where we're sitting right here, maybe 40 miles. It's a nice little beach community. Actually, that's where I used to bounce at that punk rock club, the Mayfair Theater. So I was very familiar with where these things were taking place. Mm-hmm. He lives in a trailer park there. He shoots movies. He makes movies, made 20 to 30 feature-length films, all on video. He just shoots them on video. He has a very particular writing style, which is hand to paper, pen to paper. He writes one draft, refuses to look at that draft again until he actually has his actors on set.
Wow.
And is shooting with them. Usually that set is the Vagabond Hotel, which I've stayed at.
The Vagabond Inn.
The Vagabond Inn in Ventura. I've stayed there numerous times. I used to get coffee there.
There's a few of those.
After the Mayfair closed down, after we'd kick all the gangsters out, and like that's where we would go. Like that's where we'd have our like late night coffee.
Right.
At the Vagabond. That's where his sets usually are. Most of his actors are not actors at all. They're homeless people or people that he knows from in his little community at the trailer park. The trailer park. Here are some of the names of the people that he casts in his movies. Vietnam Ron. Vietnam Ron is in there a lot. Big Ed. Walt Dongo. There's one guy in particular. Sir Bigfoot George. And there's a really old guy. I'm not sure what his name was, but it's so hard to explain this movie. One of his lead actors, he's a character. They're all characters, you'd imagine, is really old. He's so old that he has lost control of his bowels. So Giuseppe spends a lot of the time when this old guy is on set at the Vagabond. He spends a large portions of his day cleaning up this man's poop and cutting his underwear off of him at one point. And you see footage of Giuseppe wiping this old man's butt. And Giuseppe is saying, it's part of filmmaking. You know, it's what goes into it. Giuseppe is spindly, thin as a rail. He talks about how he has a very strict diet, which is he eats the exact same thing every single day. This man is insane. He's a crazy person. He eats nothing but a tin of sardines and like spinach or celery, the exact same thing, one meal every single day. He shoots all the stuff with his handheld camera. His dad is on set. His dad helps him out. His dad is the most normal one in all this. Yet he's not normal because he feeds into his son's neuroses. His son is not well.
He's supporting this, essentially.
What he's trying to do, he acts like a meth head. But I don't think he is a meth head because Giuseppe is so brutally honest, even though he is demented and not deranged.
He doesn't track.
He doesn't track well. Yeah, he's not living in our world. Okay. But if he did meth, he would just tell you he does meth. I mean, I can't see him hiding this. He would just be like, yeah, I do meth. This is why I'm like this. It's shoot day, and like he's wearing spandex. And he's talking about it because he wants to be like a spider and be able to get in and out of shots real quick. Because he's the camera guy. He's bragging to all that. And he's not a braggart at all. But like, you know, everyone that's in his movie is explaining, yeah, this is the first time it's ever been done. We're doing a full feature. We're shooting in 2 days. And I'm going to edit it. It's going to be all done within 48 hours. No one's ever done this before. I don't think anyone has. I think you're right, Giuseppe.
You're right.
Why would anyone do this? All right, here's...
There's a reason.
He saw there's an old movie. They kind of touch upon it real quickly that some avant-garde director made about cow slaughter and a butcher... A farm, where the cows go to eat their, and they show footage of cows hanging. They're already dead, but like you know, the blood's being drained. It's awful. He says that's what motivated him for this movie that they're shooting. And now this documentary is all about him making this movie in 2 days, and they follow him around on his adventures as he's making this movie with these homeless people. And he has one real actor who he pays like $200 a day, and that guy's just like, whatever you need from me. You want me to snort the flour? I'll snort flour. And then he realizes it's expanding in his lungs later. Not good. But so they're following Giuseppe, and Giuseppe is just talking a mile a minute, a mile a minute. He's a fucking crazy maniac. And he's talking about how he came to the name, which he ended up naming this movie that he's making, which is about a cow that is given like a furlough from the slaughter farm, essentially. They sent him on an all-paid vacation to a motel. This cow.
Okay.
Right? So he has a Vietnam Ron is playing the fucking cow, and he's dressed like up in the cow.
Oh, it's not a real cow.
Not a real cow.
Okay.
And that's the storyline. And he goes, and I was really having a hard time, you know, coming up with a title. So I sat down, I ate a can of garbanzo beans, and then I farted. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to call this Garbanzo Gas. And that was the name of his fucking feature. And we watch him make Garbanzo Gas.
We watch.
And it's 75 minutes streaming on Amazon. I guarantee you this. You'll never forget Giuseppe and his cast of characters and just realize that, you know, insanity is all around us.
Okay. In many forms.
He has a very distorted vision of reality, I'm afraid. And I don't know why his dad is feeding into it. His dad's, he's being encouraging. Like, yeah, this guy, he's very unique. And this is, and I think a lot of people watching this would be like, oh, wow, this is great. This guy is so great. He's so unique and he does his own thing. But guys, I'm telling you, there's going to be a very bad ending, I'm afraid, for Giuseppe.
Has Garbanzo Gas come out?
Is Garbanzo Gas available? I don't even know if these things are on IMDb, actually. I should look that up. But
who made this movie? Not Giuseppe.
The guy, Adam Rifkin, the guy that directed Detroit Rock City.
That's what it all comes back to.
Mm-hmm. Giuseppe and
so they're still friends.
Yeah, apparently Giuseppe no longer lives. I did a little bit of research. Giuseppe no longer, because he was in like Independence Day, American History X, films, yeah. Pleasantville. He was in a number of things, Cabin Fever 2. But he no longer lives in that trailer park. It's so funny because, you know, I'm guilty of it too. You know, you see a kid in a movie, that everyone knows Detroit Rock City, and you know he's with Ed Furlong. You assume that he's doing all right somewhere.
The kid from Blank, that kid usually stands out. You know what I mean? It's because there's so many actors in the world. There's only so many kid actors in the world.
Wow, Garbanzo Gas came out 2007. Some other titles that he made: Cat Piss, which is just a short. He also made Jacuzzi Rooms and Period Piece, and many, many others. And Ants, Grandpa. He refers back to. Who Flung Poo is one of the ones that he made. Tater Tots. The man is not well. He's mentally unstable. And you wonder how it's going to turn out, like his life. He lives in Texas now.
It doesn't sound good.
It's from what I know about people and the way that things go, I don't see this having a happy ending for the poor guy. And I hope that his dad also sees that. And I hope it
maybe that's why he's back in Texas.
He's not a bad guy. He means well. He's not a braggart.
Maybe that's why he's back in Texas.
He has a lot of the same energy as what's his name did in American Movie. A lot of the same energy.
What was that guy's
name? That maniacal energy.
Billy something?
No.
No.
Billy Mitchell?
No, I'm thinking of
Billy Mitchell.
King Kong.
Hold on, I'll look up real quick. And then we gotta go to break. American Movie.
American Movie.
I was so excited to see
Coven.
Mark.
Mark Hamill?
Mark Borchert. Mike Shank. That's his friend.
Mark Borchert?
Borchert.
Isn't it Borchert or something? Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyhow.
That's who made American Movie, which is also great. Nah, I don't think it's streaming. Yeah, it's $2.99 on the old Amazon right there. But
hey, good news, everyone. Yeah. I have not one, but two more Flick Fashions. But they're both streaming, and they're coming up next.
Oh, you're doubling up?
I'm doubling up. I'm going to confess the films I've seen in Flick or in the top five. A couple of them streaming. Good picks, so you will get to enjoy those with us right after these messages.
Friend.
Yeah, buddy.
Getting stuff in the mail every day, you know, because the kid's okay. Coming, right?
Yep. So baby boxes registry, and packages,
stuff shipping.
Show up.
I got a little package today, and I opened it up, and
best things come in small packages.
I didn't understand what I was looking at, and it said the Film Vault on it, and then I realized, oh my God, this is one of these little trackers with an actual Film Vault logo. No note.
They sent you a personalized tracker?
Just sent. Look at that thing. Look, that's their actual, and it's really well made. It's not like a child made it. Like they took an actual.
Where the hell's mine?
I don't know. But I got two,
that's
and I kept them
awesome.
Both.
I got two. One inscribed with BB.
So, Tracker, friends of the show, they sent me an actual logo embedded Tracker device, which evidently you can do. I had no idea. There's so much I didn't know about Tracker. But Tracker, for those of you who don't know, we've been spouting off about it for a little bit here and there in the last few weeks. It's that device that you can, it's small, it's about the size of a quarter. You can put one in your wallet, you can put one on your kid's toy, you can put one.
Tape it to the bottom of your laptop.
Wherever you like, and then it partners up with your phone. You can also use it reverse in case you lose your phone. If you're always losing your phone, your keys, you can.
I put one in my luggage when we travel.
I know you did. And you can put one on, like make it a keychain. Like, I wouldn't want to just put a regular tracker on necessarily, but now this with the Film Vault logo, that's going directly on my keychain. It looks awesome. And then if you lose your keys, bang, there they are.
They'll take you right to them.
If you're one of these people like me who's always leaving the house and then you get in your car and you realize, oh my God, I forgot my wallet, you just keep on your wallet and you set it up with your phone so that if you get 20 yards or more away from your wallet, it chimes. Your phone lets you know, hey, you're 20 yards away from your wallet.
Yep.
That can come in very handy. Tracker.
So, guys, you can tell Tracker's pretty sweet. Check it out at thetracker.com, thetracker.com. If you enter the code TFV, 30% off your entire order. A lot of these discounts are sometimes 10% off, whatever. 30% off is like almost a third. So go to thetracker, thetracker.com.
It's actually closer to a quarter.
It's actually closer to a third.
It's actually closer to a quarter.
30% is closer to 33% than it is 25%.
Oh, it's 30%. I thought it was 20%.
Come
You're
on,
right.
buddy.
Wow.
TFE is the code at thetracker.com. Check them out.
30%.
Thetracker.com.
Also, Brad.
Yeah.
You know how I found out that there was something being delivered to my front door?
How's that?
The tracker device being delivered to my front door because my phone chimed to let me know that there was activity. There was action on my front door. Thanks to Ring.
Does it make you feel better now having a pregnant wife at home and knowing that you can check, like you're alerted every time someone comes to your front door?
Not only am I alerted, I can tap into the cloud and see the video of whoever that person is at my front door.
Yep.
And my wife, God, does she enjoy watching the video footage.
It's pretty great, right? Because you can add a user. My wife
and I keep forgetting it's there. So like, you know, I'll have a friend come over and they'll come to the front door and we'll have a little exchange. We'll be talking to the front door. Jillian loves for me to pull those videos up.
What are you talking about?
She, she just thinks it's hilarious because we, you know, we look a little funny. It's fish-eyed. Right. And she's like, her parents came over the other night. She's a couple weeks ago, and she's like, "Bring it, pull up that clip where my parents came to the front door, and you gave my mom an awkward hug." All of that was recorded.
You know, what's funny is people are probably thinking, "I don't want a notification every time someone walks by my house." You can adjust the settings,
of course. Yeah, yeah.
So like, you can have like super far, super close, like however you want your settings is how sensitive it can be. It's pretty great.
So, Brian, also, Ring gives you for our listeners, you get $50 off.
That's pretty significant.
Go to ring.com/TFV. Just ring.com/TFV
for $50 off. That's pretty good.
And then you can see who's at your front door.
See who's at my front door. No, don't do that.
Ring.com.
Hi, it's Miles Teller, and you're listening to The Film Vault on AndersonandBrian.com.
Ah, Bri-Bri.
Yeah, buddy.
No Amazon this week because we're out of town.
Are we back in the show?
Right before we get right back into it, though. Yeah, we're back. The show is now upon us. I was just talking about the wife in that last read and how she likes to look at videos from our Ring camera.
Indeed.
It's on our front door now. I don't remember exactly how it came up, but I, for whatever reason, brought up the original... I just went to iTunes at Film Vault, and I went to our original some of our original reviews.
Oh no!
And I could not breathe. I was laughing so hard. It's awful because those things are still out there. Yeah. And if, you know, anyone can do a Google search on you or I, I'm sure it's one of the first things going to pop up.
It's like, why is the show rated so low?
We still have, but we have a high rating because so many people came around.
Oh,
but
nice.
You know, I think we're like four, maybe 4.5 stars, and we got.
If
like,
you're
you
still
know,
listening today, you should go back and you left a shitty review. You should go back and delete it.
We got 1,300 reviews or so, which is great, but so many of them were so mean, especially towards me. But they're really quite comical. I do shudder a little bit thinking about, you know, strangers or people like from my past looking me up and going, wow, Anderson is a total douchebag.
No apparently. One likes him.
And, you know, I read one that was actually really quite telling because he said that this one particular listener thought that I sounded like a total douche and hated me when he heard us first on the Corolla show. Which, remember, we did that first.
Oh, yeah.
We did a little pitch on his show.
Episode?
Right, which made sense. And
that was a disaster.
I had to sit there and watch him berate Donnie for 30 minutes. Right. It was so uncomfortable. About the same thing. It was like there was a sickness. Yeah. And then, in a circle.
And you're like, hey, at least you're saying the film ball over and over again.
No, but it wasn't even on the show. It was off the show.
Right.
He just berated Donnie for 30 minutes. I don't know if they're on our show or if we're on their show. How do you not know? For 30 minutes that happened. Oh, it was
a long time.
So I was uncomfortable, and then the listener, the reviewer said,
"How do you think I felt? I worked there.
I thought Anderson sound, you know, I gave him a second chance because I thought maybe he's just uncomfortable because he was that, but he's just as uncomfortable because we're in the same space, and it was actually quite telling because I was never comfortable when we did the show over there. I can never actually myself.
You've eased up.
I was always on guard because it was just an uncomfortable, awkward, because so many of the people there hated me because they had heard stories about me. Mm. Donnie hated me when he first met me because of everything he had heard from Corolla. And you don't understand.
It got worse from
that. It was like a fishbowl over there. We're doing the show and like all, you know, it's being piped into the garage. Everyone could hear it. People are walking by giving me dirty looks. And instead of actually trying to be more likable, I just dug in with it was even more of an ass.
Worse.
Oh, it was uncomfortable. Was
Can I say this? I'm gonna embarrass you with flattery right now. I think this is the best incarnation of Anderson.
Stop it.
This is the best iteration.
So I do remember this. So I was very, very hungover. Brian and I had a meeting right during this shitstorm. I was probably the most hated, biggest douchebag on all of iTunes for about a month or so. Yeah, I think I probably was. Like hundreds of every day, hundreds of horribly mean. And all I was doing was trying to talk about movies and point out good movies to people. That's all I was trying to do.
I'm just a guy.
We weren't even getting paid a dime. I was taking time out of my day, driving down there early in the morning. It was hell. I remember looking at the wife going, I don't think I can do this anymore. I love talking about movies. But anyways, I was very hungover one day. We had a lunch meeting, if you recall this.
And, was this the one at Warner Brothers?
No. With Warner Archive? No. That was a whole other story. We're going to get to our streamers in a second. Sure. I just like going down memory lane. And I remember it was someone, Gastropub, and I remember they had like chalkboards with like the menu items up
was
there.
Was it you and me?
Yeah, it was you and I.
Okay.
And we were just having a little get together to talk about the future of the show and what needs to be done and this and that. I think I might have called it. And it was like West LA. I was so hungover. I was like shaky and I was just not myself. I wasn't feeling good. And I was so kind of depressed and just embarrassed all of the horrible, things that were. I felt bad for my wife, who wasn't even my wife then. But, you know, it was so public and it was so humiliating at times. And they're still up there. I don't know how iTunes figures out, like, which ones to put at the top. But a lot of the old ones are at the top.
Oh, they are.
It was fun. I was laughing so hard at some of them. God, they're so mean. But I remember telling Brian, and I meant it at the time, and I mean it now, that a lot of guys in your position, I think, because most all of the reviews were like, poor Baldy, Brian is being abused, and he could do so much better because he's so good on air, and he has to deal with this
Anderson.
These
were insightful fans, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I remember at that meeting that we had at that horrible douchey gastropub thanking you for not doing what a lot of other people would have done, would be like listen to people at the time and be like, you know what, I'm going to say, hey, Anderson, thanks, but this isn't working, and try to find this. And I was very appreciative.
You were sincere.
And I was sincere, and it holds true today because I think I say a lot of shit about you, but I think a lot of people in your position back in the day, they might have panicked and thought that there was, because obviously the show was getting attention. It was just negative attention because of me. We were number one in all of iTunes, but most people were echoing the same thing, which was this show could be great if it was just Brian or if Brian and somebody else was doing it.
I did say that, and I regret saying it.
Oh, you said that?
I said that. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Anyways, all these years later.
Look at us.
Hey, we're doing okay. And, I'm watching movies with the same fervor as I was back then. And a lot of my friends who grew up loving movies like I did, almost all of them have fallen off. And they don't love them like they used to. And
right. It's going to be harder with a kid.
I like to think that even if this show didn't exist, I would still love movies as much as I do. But I think that this show obviously helps it.
Well, helps you project, it's your platform.
And a lot of our listeners who have been there since the beginning.
Is this your way of telling me you're quitting?
A lot of our listeners.
A lot of ideas for co-hosts.
A lot of our listeners that have been there since the beginning.
I just want to
let them know that not only Brian but I, we're both very appreciative for sticking with us through some of the tough times, the tumultuous times when we're still getting our footing. Because
we weren't doing the show for 6 months.
The show before we did it over at Corolla, we did it for about a year or so over at 97.1, and I think that was better than what we did for a year over at Corolla. I really liked those years. It was fun. I was having a really good time then. It was a different vibe, a different tone. I think the worst stuff we did was at Corolla's. There was a lot of bad vibes over there.
Well,
I will say
the show, yes, that is all true. I will say the show has evolved a lot, especially since those early podcasting days. And it's grown a lot. And I like the current incarnation of the show. I think we are doing what we should be doing. But the one thing's never changed, especially as I thought about the show. Your anger at me. Oh, it leads me into my what I was going to say, which is our dynamic. You and me, we're opposite in a lot of ways, but we also see eye to eye in very specific ways. And I think that's what the people
identify
with.
I don't like you,
and
you don't like me.
And I don't like that you don't like me.
Yeah. All right, so there. I just wanted to.
All right, I can't believe you went back and looked at those. What did Jillian think?
Is she
horrified?
I wanted to read some of them on air.
I should,
right?
Really
after all that. Especially for the people that might be like sitting in their
cubicles.
We should
bump in with those as opposed to stupid impressions.
Ah, no, I don't want to be one of those shows where it's like, yeah, we like to.
But they're only bad.
It's so hard to find anything on this goddamn app. Like, I got to actually search Film Vault, even though I have it on my phone. And then I got to go to the review section. The number one review is from our friend Gio. He was the very first one because he was also our champion back before we were on the Corolla. Greatest show about films, says Gio. Back in 2010. It seems like it was longer ago than that. Number two. Here's the second review. 2 stars. They give it 2 stars.
Hey, that's
it's titled Poor Brian. misspelled your name. I don't know how this lasted 8 years on the air. Because we were saying, the first time we ever sat down was 2003.
That's right.
So, you know, there was
some truth in the making.
I don't know how this lasted 8 years on the air. There is no chemistry between Brian and Anderson. Much of the show is Brian trying to manage Anderson's antisocial personality.
That is true.
Which makes for tedious and irritated listening. Aww. Brian would do well to strike out on his own or else seek a more affable, engaging co-host.
Affable.
All right. Number four is...
Hey, fella.
Entertaining segments. But Anderson? That's the title.
How many stars?
Anderson, two again. Yeah. Anderson is, which is my least favorite.
I know. Give it one or give it.
I think three might be my least favorite. One and five are my favorites. Is the living, Anderson is the living, breathing definition of why people don't like film critics and film buffs in general. What an elitist negative snob who thinks he knows more than he does. Get excited about something like BB. I want to fucking throat stomp that person. Like if they're right here, right now, I might swing at them. The Anderson Show. Oh, this comes in May 1st, 2010.
So good.
The Anderson Show. This is titled. Brian, you are so much better than this. That idiot Anderson is stepping all over you, bro. This is definitely the ace versus Duch. The ace versus Duchy scenario where you are ace. Yeah, we've got that. We don't have to fucking spell it out.
We got you. I didn't understand who was
this is the most fucking angerifying thing anyone's ever written about me. He writes, get another sidekick. Who can play rhythm to your lead guitar, my friend?
Oh,
you're awesome.
The best thing I've ever seen in my life.
Anderson is adult.
Adult.
What fuck?
This is the best day of my life.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Christ.
Unlistenable. Not quite sure why this is listed in Commodore comedy category.
Oh, so good.
I never wanted to be in the comedy category. We're not there anymore.
I agree. I remember yelling at Donnie about that.
If there were jokes being made, I must have missed them. The main problem I find is this podcast is that it's completely unorganized and difficult to understand and follow. BB talks way too fast. Sounds like a mumbling half the time.
That's true. Well, I was 7 months out of cancer treatment at that point.
And Anderson is too concerned with spewing out unnecessary fact statements.
Unnecessary.
Example. What should constitute summer months?
Fast forward to literally this year. We had the exact same argument.
No, we did not.
We're off the air. Because remember, we were like, when should we do summer wrap-up?
Yeah, maybe we did.
We did. When do we start summer preview? We have the same argument every year.
I think my favorite is still the one called Listen Impossible. Remember that one? Let me pull up Listen Impossible, and then we'll get to the list.
That's pretty good.
Became my favorite. A lot of people started turning around, and I like the fact that people listen to it for long enough. Anderson is a douche sometimes. Lose Anderson. Bald Brian is great, but Anderson is a complete tool. I feel the show would be
Logan, get these
great
drops.
If Brian got someone that had chemistry with him instead of that megalomaniac. This is what defensive Anderson, I guess, comes off as, because that was super defensive
You're like a porcupine with your quills out.
Mm-hmm.
You were.
Where is it? Guys are a little full of themselves. That's all that Cuban wrote. Lame. Poorly organized, had no idea what the hell was being discussed. No insightful reviews. That's the one thing that we have always been is organized. Here we go, October 23rd, 2010.
Some might say too organized.
Michael Canfield writes, listen impossible. Listen colon impossible. Here it is, the last review, and we'll get on. In a recent episode, Brian said, and I quote, if Mission Impossible was a Bond movie, it would be one of the top three Bond movies. It's comments like that which make me regret every time I get talked into giving this podcast another chance. These guys are not smart, they are not funny, and they slur their words. But
well, we don't both slur our words.
But they are.
What
both,
if we listen to the drunk episode?
But they are both friends of Adam.
Both.
So they had a popular movie podcast. Bad. Appallingly bad.
Oh, Christ.
Cunt.
This is the funniest episode I've ever done.
All right. Should we go back to the comedy section? Really? I never wanted to be in the comedy section.
Me too.
There was a lot of choices that were made for us. I felt like the show was that age-old story where like we were doing our own thing over at 97.1 and before that, anything we wanted. And then we went over to Ace.
We got picked up by the Bid Boys.
They said, hey, you're going to have a producer. His name's Logan. He's sitting right there, which was great. That was
no, we had
good
a producer
thing.
Named Katie.
Was Katie,
Katie
first?
First?
No, Logan was the very first one before we did anything, yeah. I remember emails exchanged with Logan before we even started. And And then they, you know, put us in the comedy section. They did a lot. I mean, obviously they did a lot of good for us, but they also kind of took a lot of the control away from us.
Can I tell you something? I don't know. Actually, I don't think you were even privy to this conversation because I don't think you even knew Logan at the time, or Donnie for that matter. But they wanted to stick us with someone. I'm not going to say this person's name. They wanted to stick with someone that wasn't as good. Like, oh, you can have blah, blah, blah as the producer. And I was like, like, hey, how about Logan? He's not doing much. And like, oh, okay. Because they were like saving him for other things.
Right.
He was like a valuable employee at the time. And I was like, well, how about Logan? That guy seems pretty sharp.
Uh-huh.
And so we ended up with Logan.
Oh, so because you lobbied for him.
I did.
He was a good one that they were trying to keep away from us because they didn't think we were worth it. They never thought we were worth it. Even because like when we were a resident show over there, Carolla would have like other movie critics come in and do segments on his fucking show. Insulting.
That wasn't insulting at all.
All right. Let's get on. Hey, and just to be clear, because I think there are still people who are listening to this right now who think we got fired. We did not get fired.
No, it was a mutual.
It was not mutual. No.
You're right.
It was not mutual at all.
I'm trying to be polite about it.
They didn't care too much, I don't think. But we were never asked to leave. We left.
We said we are not going.
No, they got rid of our producer, and they said we'd have to replace him. And I said, finally, we have an out. We can finally leave on our own.
It was a clean break.
But a lot of people, I know there's a lot of fucking stories, and a lot of people think that Carolla... like listen to an episode or just said, I can't have Anderson around here anymore. We didn't get fired either because we were never
getting paid. He disliked you very much. But
we were bringing money into the network. We probably still bring some money into that network.
Through the old link?
Some more money. Fine. Money probably goes into Carolla's pocket because of the show still, because of the old link. Mm. But we never got one red cent, not a penny. All that work.
Mm.
And anyway.
Here we are. Look at us. We're thriving.
Happy now.
We're doing some streaming picks, starting now with me, number five. A movie that just came up on the top five hot scenes, Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
And we both were sort of like, man, we really love this movie. And it doesn't come up that often. And we feel like people might look at it as homework. But you really should see 12 Angry Men. 12 Angry Men is a fantastic movie we just talked about.
Wow.
What?
You're going old. I'm going all new.
This is the only old movie. Everything else is new. But this one is actually streaming on many different platforms. It's on YouTube. There's a varying quality, so please make sure you find a good one. I'll make sure Logan links to a good one from our site. But if you're so inclined to look it up yourself, there's very varying quality to 12 Angry Men on YouTube. But it is streaming for
terrible.
Free.
The aspect ratio is off, and there's like a light on. People just set up like their phones, I think, in front of the TV and push record and walk out. A lot of them that I find too, where they show them in their entirety.
It's off frame.
The middle is all white.
Yeah, yeah. They're like they're off center, or like it takes up part of the screen. It's very strange. So please do the little bit of legwork you need, or like I said, I'll ask Logan to link to a good one. But Sidney Lumet's 12 Angry Men, talked about it recently, so I don't need to go into depth about it again, other than to say it's fantastic and it's. It holds up despite being a black and white movie from 1957.
A very unique feeling you get as a viewer to watch one of these very older movies that you have always thought of as homework. And when it clicks and it starts working for you and you're into it, there's a very unique, satisfying feeling about that.
And I don't think there's any score to this movie too, which only brings you in more. It feels like you're eavesdropping. Like you're literally like looking at something you shouldn't be looking at.
I don't know if it's an elitist feeling you kind of get, or like you're seeing behind the curtain, or you're like kind of, it's like reading a really good, like a challenging book too. Like you get in the groove. It's rare. Most of these old movies that I give a shot to are like, they're a slog, but every now and again, and we can tell you 12 Angry Men it's a layup.
Yep. Everyone likes this movie for good reason.
Number five for me, this is streaming on Fuckflix. This is my oldest movie that I'm going to have on the list. Sean William Scott is Doug Glatt in Goon. The reason I have Goon on the list is because I love Goon. It's a story of a goon hockey player, but it's a story. He's got the heart of gold. He's dumb as rocks, but he is Stifler. Stifler?
That's right.
Stifler, right? Stifler. He will forever be Stifler. Yep. Sean William Scott. And, it's August. We miss our hockey, us hockey fans. And, get a little taste. Do you ever see? I had you watch Goon, right?
No, you did not. I've never
Goon's
seen Goon.
A sweetheart of a movie.
Will non-hockey fans like it?
It's rated R. And, there's a lot of good comedy in here for non-hockey. And, non-hockey fans are all familiar with the tropes that go along with hockey and how they're most, especially back in the day, everyone needed to have a goon on their team to protect the
face.
The finesse players. Yeah. And it's like a Rudy of hockey, but not nearly as sweet, much more funny, but it still is sweet. It's a great movie.
Right. Where is it? Where is
Goon.
It streaming? Where is it
streaming on Fuckflix.
Netflix.
I don't want to say great movie. It's a very good movie.
Okay. This pops up on Netflix a lot as a suggestion, so maybe I'll add it to the queue. Streaming on Amazon, everybody.
What just happened?
Is a movie I assigned Anderson a few months ago.
Mm.
Mississippi Grind. Mississippi Grind is streaming for free for Prime members on Amazon.
Ben Mendelsohn kills it in this movie.
Ben Mendelsohn, who you might recognize from The Dark Knight Rises, co-stars with Ryan Reynolds.
He's also in Killing Them Softly. He's he's the lead. His name's Danny...
McBride.
How could I forget their last name?
Ocean.
He's the lead in Bloodline, if you were watching Bloodline.
Written and directed by Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck, directors of Sugar and Half Nelson. Yes, Ryan Reynolds is terrific as the bearded gambler that he befriends Ben Mendelsohn, who is a bit of a desperate gambler, a bit of a degenerate, but he's, you know what? Much like Goon is unexpectedly sweet, you said, this one's unexpectedly sweet. Yuck, you're really rooting for Ben Mendelsohn and Ryan Reynolds to an extent, but Ben Mendelsohn is a star and he's the hero and you're really rooting for him. And it's he's a sympathetic character.
Danny Rayburn.
That's the character's name.
In Bloodline, which is a Netflix show, 2 seasons. No humor to be found anywhere, but Danny Rayburn's great. Ben Mendelsohn.
You liked Mississippi Grind, right?
Yeah.
90% Rotten Tomatoes.
I did. It has some great moments in it, some very memorable moments. And you're sitting at the table, like betting it all with them. And they made some really interesting choices that worked really, really well.
Yeah. It's a road trip movie. Like I think I compare it to a modern day Huck Finn, you know, traveling down the river.
You know what? I'm going to switch up. I had Short Term 12, which I think might get a little bit too much play on this here program. You think?
We talk about it a lot, but it's a good movie.
Love Short Term 12. It's streaming as well on the old Fuckflix, I believe. But I'm going to switch up to a movie called Slow West.
Oh, a new one.
Starring Ben Mendelsohn.
Oh.
No, he's not starring. He's in it, though.
He's featuring Ben Mendelsohn.
It's actually starring a kid named Cody Smith McPhee.
Slow West.
Slow West is also starring Michael Fassbender. Slow West is a new take on...
I need to know what yours is from.
On 2015. Okay. 2015. It's a new look at... a Western. I'm not a giant Western fan, but this one really, really worked for me. It's scant 84 minutes, Brian, an hour and 24 minutes total. And the story is this. There's a young kid. He's probably, I don't know, 16, 17 years old. Think of Jay Baruchel type.
Okay.
He's a Jay Baruchel type, right? And he's in love. He's a Scot, and he's in love with a Scottish girl who picked up and left Scotland. We're not sure why, but she moved to the West. She moved out to the United States. On the Western front, and he is wandering across the land looking for her.
Wow.
Evidently, he came into New York, got some stuff, he had a few bucks, and he's just walking the woods by himself with Native Americans running around and soldiers, and then he runs into Michael Fassbender early in the movie, and he and Michael Fassbender make the journey together for a fee. Michael Fassbender will be his muscle and protect him because this kid has no business being out there. And this movie is done with such art and fun and humor and vignettes. Really, really beautifully shot ending, which you'll never, ever forget.
Really?
The ending is shot.
And where is it streaming?
It's streaming on Amazon.
Okay.
For $0 if you're a Prime member.
Slow West.
The end, it's hard to... talk about it without giving anything away, but the way that it's set up, it's like you could almost see it acting out on a stage. The way that it was shot with the vignettes, beautiful blue sky. But I hope I'm not making this sound like homework, because it's not.
No,
Slow West is fantastic. Really, so I'm subbing that in last minute.
Okay,
because Ben Mendelsohn shows up there.
This is a new one.
Yes. Okay. Slow West.
And
it's got this beautiful little thing, which you rarely see in movies, which is almost like a built-in intermission. He's camping out with Michael Fassbender, and then he gets up to pee, and he goes back to camp, but he's lost in the woods. So he goes to a different camp where there's all these different people sitting around the campfire, and they're telling stories. So you see a little story that has nothing to do with the movie as a whole. Yeah. It's right in the middle of the movie. It acts almost like a little intermission, which I love. Every script that I've ever written, I've written 5 feature-length scripts. Every single one of them has something right in the middle that has nothing to do with everything else.
Interesting.
It's like a little break from
palate cleanser.
Yeah.
Number 3 for me. Speaking of Ryan Reynolds.
The Voices.
No. The Voices.
Really?
The Voices is streaming.
Wait,
on Amazon.
But I've been defending this one too. You don't like The Voices.
I do like The Voices.
No, I thought you hated
Christy
The Voices.
Didn't like The Voices. She was freaked out. And she's like, what is Anderson? Of course he likes this movie. No, I like The Voices. It's a bit of a tough watch. And I don't know if I liked it nearly as much as you. But The Voices is a good movie. I have nothing wrong with The Voices.
All
right. Yeah. Voices is streaming on Amazon.
I love The Voices.
For free for Prime members. Directed by Marjane?
Marjane.
Could be. Satrapi. Starring Ron Reynolds. Anna Kendrick. Gemma Arterton, Jackie Weaver, And yes, Ryan Reynolds performed all the voices in the movie.
Because there are things that usually don't talk
There are non-human entities.
The voices. I give a lot of shit to Ryan Reynolds. I have over the years. This is a role made for him.
This is a true dark comedy.
This is, I think, the same woman directed this as who directed Persepolis.
Oh.
Back in the day, which is the film about a punk rock little girl growing up in Iran. It was an animated film.
The sound design will stick with you. There's a lot of splattering, a lot of splattery splattering.
Feels like a Mike Judge film.
He's never been anything nearly this sort of violent and gruesome.
But it's done with a wink and a nod.
It's a comedic version by any means. I said it was a comedic version of like Take Shelter. Like for so much that happens, not inside the guy's head, but so much that he is projecting a version of the world onto the world. It takes a very darkly comedic look at that.
It's as dark as like Death Becomes Her.
I never saw that.
Yeah, but it's like just goofy dark.
Okay.
It's like goofy.
Oh, Anderson, this is not like a
Severed heads and whatnot in Death Becomes Her. I mean, okay, there are some jarring moments where like we see the world through his eyes and then it flashes and we see what other people are actually seeing. And it's like, holy shit.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's quick.
But even when he's like killing people, there's like some gruesomeness.
You probably never watched Dexter, but Dexter was like... I guess it was really dark to your mom, but it wasn't really that dark.
Okay.
Dexter's way darker than The Voices.
Okay. Yeah. I've not seen Dexter, but The Voices is number three on my list. It's a very good movie, and it is streaming on Amazon for free for Prime members.
Number three for me. This is a documentary, the only documentary I have on my list. This came out in 2015. This is streaming on Amazon for Prime members. The documentary is called Meru. Meru. It's about three climbers who attempt to top Mount Meru. They attempt to summit Mount Meru, which is one of the most coveted prizes in the high-stakes game of Himalayan big wall climbing. Right.
Okay.
This one peak in particular is called the Shark Fin. I don't know if anyone's actually gotten to the top of that. I saw this in the theater last year, and I was blown away. It was right around the time that Everest was coming out, too.
Okay.
And they call this peak the anti-Everest. It's in the same part of the world, but it's much different than Everest because it's straight up. And sometimes it's like, I'm sure they have a term for it, but it's like actually more than up.
It's like inverted almost.
And what these climbers go through and some of the near fatal tragedies that occur along the way and their stick-to-itiveness is inspiring.
Really?
And obviously there's a lot of beautiful shots and whatnot.
Oh, wow.
I was thrilled to see that this is streaming on Amazon.
Meru, M-E-R-U.
M-E-R-U. If you got like a big screen TV, which a lot of you do because you value watching films and streaming things, watch this fucking movie. It's beautiful and it's inspiring too. Meru, my number three.
Number two for me. You're going to like this, Anderson. These are both my confessions. Number two and number one are films that I recently saw. And I'll be confessing right now. They're streaming on Netflix, both of them. And they're both movies you talked about. And I wrote them down. I said, that sounds interesting. And I will see.
I like that.
Starting with number two, streaming on Netflix, Look Who's Back.
Did you enjoy it? I was afraid you're going to hate this thing.
Directed by David Wenent. He's a German man, I assume. Starring Oliver Masucci as Adolf Hitler.
Adolf. Now, here's the thing with Look Who's Back. And I was warned, a listener let me know that my instincts told me to turn it off after 15 minutes because it was not my style of film. And it's goofy.
What about it?
Goofy. The humor was not really my style of humor. Okay. It was.
It's a little Borat-y in certain points.
Borat-y, but just goofy. There's no better word for it. Like almost like made for kids, but obviously not made for kids. Shoddy filmmaking.
Okay.
Like stupid, like cheap filmmaking, okay. Like just cheap gags and whatnot. However, it all makes sense once if you watch the entire movie and you realize who's actually responsible for the movie you're watching.
Exactly.
It's very meta, it actually works. And by the end, God, I was glad that I stuck this one out because it's a thinker.
Okay, so let me tell you about Look Who's Back. Look Who's Back is let's say it's a...
it's almost a satire.
It's very much a social satire. Adolf Hitler, without explanation, wakes up in modern-day Germany, and he is in full Nazi paraphernalia. He's back. He is woken up.
You don't know why. He just shows up in Berlin.
He wakes up in the spot of his bunker, basically. Yeah, because they say, like, this. The here now was Adolf Hitler's bunker.
Right.
So basically wakes up where he died, and he wakes up, and he's 45-year-old Adolf Hitler.
Yes.
You want to fix that?
I'm sorry, guys. If you can hear the buzz, because of time restraints, Logan's not with us. Don't touch things. You don't know what you're doing. There might be a little bit of a buzz, or maybe Logan corrected it. Who knows? It could be on there. Who knows?
I'm jiggling things. Jiggling things. Percent.
We've tried some different things. Whatever.
We're going to have to deal with it. We're almost done. There's a little buzz. Tiny buzz.
Okay.
Look who's back. This is very much a social satire. Hitler wakes up in modern-day Germany and evolves modern-day Germany, and it is Borat-esque at times in the sense that there were times where I wasn't sure if they were actually approaching real people on the street, if he was approaching actors. It very much felt like real people.
That's why it didn't really feel like full-on satire, as in it was almost hypothetical. It's almost like a hypothetical.
And there was too much plot. There was a lot of plot.
They needed some plot devices, but essentially it was like, how would modern day Germans react to a classic Hitler?
Yeah.
To the guy. Nowadays. And there's a lot of parallels, not to get political or anything, but you watch this thing right now, because this was made a few years ago, a couple years ago.
2015 is when it came out.
Yeah, but they probably wrote it and directed it, a couple years ago. Especially with what's going on with our election.
Okay. I see what you're
there's
saying.
A lot of parallels, and it's funny, and it's also, like I said,
it's audacious.
It's much more.
It is audacious at points.
It's much more than just a goofy comedy.
Oh, yeah. There's about, I really felt there's about 80 minutes of laugh out loud material here, which made it totally worth it. This is a movie you should absolutely stream.
I'm so happy you saw this, because I would have guessed that you wouldn't have given it enough of your time.
There, about 75% of this movie was very funny and very insightful. And I think that, so Anderson, you know how, like, let me make this parallel. Remember in Borat when he goes to like the southern dignitaries' homes, remember what I mean? He brings a hooker.
Yes.
And then when he goes up with the frat guys in their motorhome or whatever, like, those are archetypes. Those are tropes in American culture. And you know who those guys are right away without having to have explained to you. You just know who those guys are. We don't know who the people are in Germany.
No, there's some comedy we missed.
I'm sure there's layers a lot of like things that we just didn't
get. The recent history of their politicians and whatnot Hitler's reacting to, because he does a bunch of catch up. He sees what's gone on since his death, and his reaction is funny, and it's daring.
There's
the same
certain
ways
parts where he's like drawing portraits of people in the town square. You know what I mean? He's like,
that's what you would have done back
drawing
then.
Drawing portraits of tourists. It's pretty funny.
And
there's some really funny stuff in this movie.
I hate to say it, but a lot of the things that they had the audacity to make you kind of like some of what Hitler is doing. For sure. They wanted the audience
to be
uncomfortable.
I totally agree with you.
To the point where you are agreeing with some of the... Because he's mainly upset about innocuous things like the amount of cooking shows that are on modern-day television.
Yes.
That upsets him to no end, which I can relate to. Yeah. I get furious as well.
He's like, every channel. I totally agree. And Anderson, I think you hit the nail on the head, because the real satire here is how... When Hitler did rise to power, before when the Nazi Party came into rule in Germany, he was extremely charismatic, and people were like fell under his spell.
Right.
Like they're like, this guy's speaking for us. This guy's all about change.
He'd come out and he'd be silent for like 4 or 5 minutes. Yeah. He would let them
he would wait
to stop clapping, which no one does anymore. Now they've come out and like say thank you. But yeah, obviously.
So there is some parallel. You're absolutely right.
But what I'm saying is the audacity to have them make the viewer actually see eye to eye with Hitler on anything.
Yep.
You know, that's enough. Just me saying
or just make him a sympathetic character in any way.
If this was a review show that was on a network, and me just saying that might get this show canceled.
Yeah, if you said, the character of Hitler was really was sympathetic.
Enigmatic,
in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and it made you like him. But that was the point. The point was getting the viewer to actually like this character who was playing Hitler. Oh, yeah, it's good. I'm really happy that you
Oliver,
like it.
Oliver Masucci. Oh, I just got a note for the studio. We're canceled.
My number two, is it?
Already there.
2015, this movie came out. I think it was actually just released in theaters this year. I think it's technically a 2016 film. This is about a man, you might know him, Lance Armstrong.
The Armstrong Lie?
No, that's a documentary. This is not. This is called A Program.
Oh.
The Program. This one came and went, and it's unfortunate because it's a good movie. This is David Walsh's story, who is the journalist who followed the story and
dug
because he knew there was something going on. Played by Chris O'Dowd.
Yes, that's right.
Ben Foster plays Lance Armstrong. And Jesse Plemons, who's one of my favorites. You know him if you're a big fan of... Oh, let's see. Probably Breaking Bad. I think he played.
No one watched that.
Anyways, his name's Jesse Plemons. He was in Black Mass.
Okay.
He was one of the informants gone wrong who kind of ratted out What's his fuck over there? White.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's a very recognizable character.
One of our best actors.
He's one of the toughs.
Great.
He's one of the toughs in Black Mass.
He's unrecognizable in a lot of his roles, though. So he plays all, so in this one, he plays a spindly bike cyclist.
He was like a thick tough guy in Black Mass.
And he's like an unassuming kid in Breaking Bad. So he plays famed cyclist Floyd Landis.
Who I've actually met.
Oh, have you? So that's who he plays.
Corolla show back in the day.
And this is a really, I was afraid because I had heard some interviews with Ben Foster talking about Lance Armstrong being a hero to him and his research for this role. I was afraid that it was going to be a very pleasing rendition of Lance Armstrong pulling many punches, but he is villainous as fuck.
Oh, this is directed by Stephen Frears.
Stephen Frears directed it. This is a good movie. I hadn't gotten to Stephen Frears yet.
Director of High Fidelity and Philomena.
It's upsetting that this one kind of came and went. There's so much noise out there. This one didn't really get its due. Maybe we're kind of tired of Lance Armstrong to this point.
Yeah,
the story's been told.
This very much came and went. I wonder why.
But I went in. I wasn't really that hot to trot to watch it, but I got sucked in. This is a good movie. The Program. Not going to be up for any awards at the end of the year. And unfortunately, it's kind of swept under the rug. But this is one not to sleep on. It is streaming live. It is available for free on Amazon. $0 if you are a Prime member.
Came out in March. I can't believe this kind of came and went so fast.
Yeah, it's a good movie. I'm telling you. And Amazon. It's only got a 6.5 on IMDb, but what does that say? What has it got on Rotten Tomatoes?
I have no idea. I'm on IMDb.
Dustin Hoffman's in it. Got a little cameo there.
Rotten Tomatoes, only 54%.
That's stupid. It's a good movie.
You like it?
Yeah, it's good.
I wonder why.
54. That's more critics like it than don't.
More than half gave a good review.
And it's really misleading because those 54% of the critics, they might have loved it, you know?
True. My number one movie streaming that I recommend this week is on Netflix, streaming for free for Netflix members. It is, my last film, Anderson, was about Adolf Hitler. Hmm. This is also about a racist.
What?
I'm Flick Besson. Ryan Bishop. Welcome to Leith.
Oh,
Welcome to Leith.
You realize this was my number one last time we did a streaming.
Oh, was
episode.
It really? I guess where got I got crabs. This from. This is where I got this
Welcome
from.
Welcome to Leith.
Yep.
Yes.
Welcome to the 2015 documentary directed by Michael Beach Nichols and Christopher K. Walker. This is about Craig Cobb. He is introduced to us as one of the top 10 white supremacists.
He's a character.
I don't know if I guess they rank him.
Well, FBI, I'm sure the government has lists. Exactly.
He essentially takes over the town of Leith, North Dakota.
He buys some land in this tiny little town, population like 20.
He finds this remote town. Yeah, this remote 12. Town out in BFE, North
He's
Dakota.
He's brazen, too.
It's incredibly small and remote. There is literally, as they say, one business in this town. It's a bar. People like congregate. And Leith, North Dakota gets a visit from Craig Cobb, who goes out there and starts buying up some property.
And
some
flags.
Plots of land.
Starts planting his Nazi flags
right.
all around his,
right.
his property. Yeah. And so he's just out there in the open with his, you know, wide open land. And you just, you know, in this quiet little, quite sleepy burg.
Well, first,
remember
they introduced him. Like he starts showing up people's like front door and like, are you interested in selling your house? You know, do you have any land for sale around here?
He was
like,
trying
no,
to build a Nazi's utopia.
Yeah, he was like an alcove for Nazis, for white supremacists.
What's really interesting about this movie, though, is the access in the sense that they got not only footage from the poor town folk that were dealing with this guy, and their only recourse because of free speech and because of the laws that, you know, that protect us, yet when jackasses come in here like this and abuse them, their only recourse was like town meetings and city council meetings and trying to get him removed that way. Now they had footage obviously from all these poor town folk that were just trying to, you know, cleanse their
very small town, very,
but they also had cell phone footage from him and his little cronies because they thought, I think in their narcissism, believed that the documentarians were making a movie where they were the protagonists.
Yeah, they got a little too comfortable with what they were trying to accomplish out there and got in their own way in a lot of ways.
Yes.
And a lot of guns got involved, a lot of heavy artillery.
I'm glad that it didn't go down as ugly as it could have, but my one gripe about Welcome to Leith is it doesn't have much teeth. I mean, that at the center of what they open the movie with and what they try and make it all about is kind of a non-event.
It's a bit of a slow burn. In
but
the
like
sense
the main
that
event at the crux of the whole thing, which is the climax and the opening, not a whole lot going on there.
I guess so. I really more looked at it as sort of a very, in a lot of ways, a very bleak, very sad observation of this little town, this little almost insulated town their loss of innocence. You know what I mean? They really were forced to accept a modern world. And they're not Amish, obviously.
Not even a modern world. That's an old world. That he's trying to bring his old...
Modern problems, I guess is what I'm saying. Like they're
modern evil or just evil.
Yeah. Like you're right, modern was the wrong word. They were forced to accept this outside force that they wanted nothing to do with. But now then, now it's on. You must deal with it.
It's interesting, too, because, I mean, he could... Our rights allow us, you could put a giant Nazi flag in front of your house right now. Yes, and they'd probably shut you down pretty quick because they'd say it's like hate, you know, hate speech and you're right. inciting this right. and that. In a tiny little town, though, you get away with murder.
Well, speaking of which, now, the one moment that I remember the most, affected me the most was, remember, so basically the white supremacists that came, because he got a lot to come there and like move into town with him and like buy houses. And the one guy goes out on patrol, he gets his rifle and he's patrolling up and down the streets and terrifying everyone.
This is how the movie opens.
And he comes back and he comes into his house with his wife. Uh-huh. And as soon as the door opens, you don't get to see, luckily, they don't involve the children that much, but the door opens just enough that you can see.
Because they have kids. These white supremacists have kids.
And you see his little, you kind of get a glimpse of these little kids playing on the ground. All of a sudden, you hear like in this, like what is essentially a 3 or 4 year old's, hi, daddy.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh.
That's someone's dad. And you know what?
You're involving a 4 year old.
That wife is one of the worst things you've ever seen. She's the planet. She's the worst. What is she just a piece of work? My God.
What a
victim she was too. Everything was poor me, and can you believe they're doing this to us? And fuck you,
she's contemptible. I think you know it's funny. I just put 2 and 2 together. I think I may have just found out we were pregnant at the time, and so I think it really affected me.
Were you getting all precious?
No, when I heard the little girl, I'd be like, "Hi, daddy!" And like it was the guy who was essentially,
your daughter's gonna have a skinhead for a dad.
It's true. It's true. And a guy who's not so subtly racist.
Number one for me. Just talked about it last week, talking about it again this week. It's number one for me because Mustang is a must-see as far as I can.
Oh, this came up last week.
Mustang, yes. This is the Turkish film made by a French filmmaker.
French Turk.
And it's a story of the 4 little orphan Turkish girls. They're all sisters, and they all live in the same house. And they're essentially at one point or another in the film under house arrest because... they're being young girls in public, which is to say they're singing songs and skipping about. They might talk to a boy from their school. So they're yanked out of school. They're planted in the house. They live with their aunt and uncle who are exceptionally strict. And they're essentially just waiting to be married off in arranged marriages. And we get to spend considerable time with these 4 little Turkish girls who are leaning on each other for support and trying to figure out how to get out of a horrible situation. This was up for Best Foreign Language Film last year. There is a lot of controversy, which I discussed last week. The youngest girl is such a badass. You will never forget her. Much as the same way that you never forgot Hush Puppy. If you ever saw Beasts of the Southern Wild, this little chick takes control of her situation and fights back. And it's a triumph. I love Mustang. My number one streaming pick right now. A little bit of a challenge because it is a foreign language film, and it's not quite as quick as some of the movies you might be accustomed to.
Sounds a bit heavy.
But I think that a lot of our listeners would really appreciate Mustang.
Okay.
Mustang. There we go.
That's on Netflix.
That is on Netflix, yes.
Yes.
Yes. Directed by Denise Gomze Urguven.
Oh, I know Denise.
Urguven. And I don't think it won. I don't remember what won last year. You remember what one?
Best foreign language film?
Yeah.
I
saw it, whatever it was.
Damn it.
Logan, you want to look that up?
Someone's yelling at us right now.
Mm-hmm. Maybe 2 people are. Mm-hmm. Awards. Oscar nominee for best foreign language film. There should be a way that I can click right onto this, right? 2016. Oscar nominee. No, it's not letting me click.
Come on, buddy.
Come on. What was
the foreign language film? You look it up and I'll say the goodbyes.
Yes.
Thanks everyone for listening this week. We appreciate it. Anderson is in camp right now and he will be back soul freshly scrubbed. And don't have a list of the feature artists in front of me. Logan has that and he will be posting it on andersonandbrian.com. Go there, check out all the feature artists and check out their music. Tell me you heard them here. And if you want to be heard by dozens of people, then send your stuff over to the contact link on andersonandbrian.com. Thank you guys for clicking through all of the Amazon stuff you did. We don't have an Amazon read this week because, like I said, we are doing this a week ahead of time. But we appreciate you clicking through all the things you click through in absentia. In absentia.
Mm-hmm. Are you buying time for me?
I am really buying time for me. Thanks also to those of you who vote on our Lister Top 5s over at... Facebook. We're at The Film Vault on Facebook. We are The Film Vault on Twitter as well. Logan often posts. Send us topic ideas. People send us good ideas all the time for top fives. And we use them. We use them all the time. So do that. Anderson, almost out. Grouper's the movie.
Grouper'sthemovie.com.
Sign up for Anderson's mailing list, and he will spam you. He will spam you with
letters. Not true at all. I have not even sent out my first email yet. Hopefully, I have by the time this is released.
He'll be attempting to log into your emails via your email address.
Oscar winner for best foreign language film in the year 2016. I know. Son of Saul. I should have known that. I have not seen it. It's streaming. Look at that.
How about that?
Bonus pick streaming. I've not seen. I've heard that it's tough. I've heard it's a real tough watch, but I got to watch that. Son of Saul.
Who do you do it for?
We do it for Van Gogh.